Look, up in the sky. Wait, are you using a telescope? If so, did you ever think how a tube and lens could help you look at things that are so far away? Telescopes today can look deep into the far reaches of the universe, giving scientists and amateur backyard astronomers a glimpse into fascinating places and objects in the sky. 150 years ago, telescopes were much simpler but relied on similar principles. Today, we're going to learn about America's first successful telescope maker, a man by the name of Henry Fitts. Fitts lived from 1808 to 1863, and during a 15-year stretch, he produced about 80% of the telescopes made here in the United States. After his death, his shop in Long Island was left basically undisturbed until the 1950s. That's when curators from the Smithsonian walked through its door, taking a step back in time, as the shop had been left almost completely undisturbed from when Fitts had last left it. Let's listen to curator Stephen Turner discuss the work of Henry Fitts and his telescope shop.
My name is Stephen Turner. I'm the curator in the Physical Sciences Collection of the National Museum of American History in the Smithsonian Institution. Today I'll be talking about Henry Fitts, America's first successful commercial telescope maker and an important figure in early American science. Henry Fitts was born in 1808 and died in 1863. He was a man of many interests. He was a cabinet maker, he was active in early photography, and he was also a very dedicated telescope maker and amateur astronomer. Fitts made some of the earliest American daguerreotype photographs. He claimed to have made one of the first portraits ever made in 1839, and in 1841 he opened a successful photography studio in Baltimore, one of the first in America. Although his photography business was extremely successful, he kept experimenting with lens making and was deeply interested in astronomy, and by 1845 he had begun making telescopes full-time. Fitts won many awards for his telescopes and was really the first commercial American telescope maker. As I said, he was very successful, and it has been calculated that between 1840 and 1855, in that 15-year period, he made 80% of the telescopes made in America. He made hundreds of them. Unfortunately, he died suddenly in 1863, just as his business was at its highest success. His 16-year-old son, Harry, took over the business temporarily, but he struggled to keep it going. And by 1884, the company was out of business and the telescope-making shop had been closed. The shop remained closed until the 1950s, when Mrs. Willard Howell, one of Fitts's descendants, donated it to the Smithsonian. When the Smithsonian staff arrived, they found the shop in basically the same condition as it had been when Fitts was in business. It was a time capsule. The nameplate was still on the door, and Fitts's hat was still hanging on the peg inside. There were even still pots on the stove, and all of Fitts's tools were just where he had left them. Fitts made all the parts for his telescopes, including the lenses, prisms, eyepieces, filters, lamps, mounts, and at least in some cases, the wooden telescope tubes themselves. He got his glass mostly from France, but almost all of his glass came from Europe. And one of the problems of his business was always to find high-quality optical glass for his telescopes. Fitts's shop contained a number of specially made tools, including special hand tools for working brass, but also special tools for cutting and grinding the glass lenses. And this is the 12-inch lens from the telescope that Fitts made for Vassar College. This telescope is now on display in the National Museum of American History. At the time it was made, this was one of the largest telescopes in the United States. Henry Fitts was America's first successful commercial telescope maker, and the large number of telescopes that came out of his shop were important in increasing American interest and knowledge of astronomy. Although Fitts's telescopes were later surpassed in quality and size, he was an important pioneer in American science and scientific instrument making, and he served as a model for those who came after him.
Can you talk a little bit about the lab was donated, or his workplace was donated, his shop was donated to the Smithsonian. Mm-hmm. In what year was that?
In the 1950s. The shop was donated, yes.
What was it like?
Unfortunately, I wasn't there.
Right.
Yeah. This is such an unusual thing for museum people to be able to find. These shops are valuable and important places, and they rarely are saved if they are. So this was a real time capsule, a view into the past, and really the beginning of American interest in science, American activity in science. And to have such a central figure, have all his work preserved, is really a special case, and something that we're putting considerable study into now to really understand what Fitz was doing and what it meant to American science.
So when a telescope's made, everybody knows about like the tube part, and mm-hmm. there's a lens, obviously. What else is going on when someone creates a telescope like this?
Well, you have telescopes are heavy, so you have to have a mount to hold them. And there's a big lens on one end, which collects a lot of light and focuses it, but then you have to enlarge that. And so that's what an eyepiece essentially does, is it's a magnifier to make the image larger, both larger and brighter, since you're bringing in more light. And then you have to have a mechanism in the telescope to focus these lenses, depending on if you're looking at a moon or a star or something on the Earth. The focus points will be a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's the pitch that they found on the stove?
Yeah.
And what is the pitch used
for? It was used to attach the lenses to the machines that were used to grind them.
Okay.
But basically, so you could attach the lens to a holder that was then used to manipulate the glass against the grinding material. Mm-hmm. And you used special tools with specially cast templates for his lenses, so that they sort of automatically made the proper curves, and then all the final polishing he did himself for all of the lenses that came out.
What was it about Fitz's telescopes or his methods that was different for the time period? What made him such a successful telescope maker?
Fitz was able to, well, Americans were anxious to buy their scientific instruments from American manufacturers. They were tired of looking to Europe for leadership in scientific matters and anxious to develop American expertise. So Fitz fit right in with that, and the fact that his telescopes were made in the United States meant that they were considerably cheaper than European scopes. So that was encouraging for people that wanted to pursue astronomy as either a hobby or as a study.
So right place, right time.
Exactly so. Yeah. Exactly so.
Now, I'm assuming scientists were purchasing these telescopes, but were they the only ones that were using telescopes at the time?
There weren't many professional astronomers at this time. Most of the larger telescopes that Fitz made went into colleges and universities, and his medium and smaller instruments went to private observatories or amateur astronomers. They were used sort of typically at the time to find comets, which is a big object of study, to separate double stars, to basically do the hard legwork of mapping the sky.
Did amateur astronomers, were they purchasing telescopes at this time, or was that further down the road?
No, there was a huge popular interest in astronomy. In the 1840s, a number of important comets were seen by all Americans. There were some large comets, and that really piqued interest in astronomy. And there were also a lot of traveling lecturers talking about astronomy and the solar system and the sky. And this was just a popular area of interest for people. And there was always the promise that someone looking up at the sky could make a big, important discovery and make a reputation. Mariah Mitchell, who used the Vassar telescope that Fitz made that's on exhibit in American History, she became famous by discovering a comet, and that really launched her career as America's first important woman astronomer.
Take Mariah Mitchell and that Fitz telescope as an example. What could someone potentially see with that, as opposed to what scientists can see today with their telescopes?
Well, I mean, you know, one of the big hurdles was to see things outside of the solar system and then outside of our galaxy. And Mariah Mitchell could see things outside of our solar system, so she could see nebula and stuff, but she couldn't really resolve them into individual stars. So what she could learn about the universe was sort of limited. She could only see a certain envelope. But then like, you know, the big 200-inch telescope out of Palomar came in, and they can resolve individual stars in galaxies, you know, hundreds and hundreds of light years away. So it's really order of magnitude. It's phenomenal what, you know, what we can see now and what they couldn't see then. Yeah, it's really, and you know, one of the things that the history of science folks are always interested in is the relationship between instruments and what we can know. Yeah, because it's complicated and kind of convoluted, but you know, in this case, it's really clear with astronomy. Mm-hmm. Every little fraction that you make your telescope bigger, you're expanding further into space and further back into time.
So really, discovery is only limited by advancements in technology.
That's really one of the key things is the instrumentation, and a lot of times, you know, if your instrumentation isn't good, you're going to get bad results and that sort of thing.
Well, thanks, Steve, for taking the time to speak with us today.
My pleasure.
I'd like to thank Stephen Turner for taking the time to discuss Henry Fitts with us. Be sure to tune in again next month as we get another behind-the-scenes look at the interesting work that goes on here at the National Museum of American History. This podcast has been made possible by a generous grant from the Verizon Foundation. Creative Commons music provided by Two Pole. To hear more, go to freemusicarchive.org.